As the problems facing our world continue to increase, have you noticed the growing popularity of a one-world government? The current chaos and crisis are a breeding ground for revolution, the rise of despotic leaders and totalitarian governments. Such changes have taken place within nations many times in history, but never at an international level. Dr. David Jeremiah explains how the current call for a new world order would actually violate God's plan for nation states as he continues his series, The Coming Economic Armageddon. Now, here's David to introduce today's message.
Well, thank you for joining us today. We take another step in our journey through this prophetic series called The Coming Economic Armageddon. And today we're going to talk about the new world order. I remember over the years thinking about the new world order and hearing some things about conspiracies and all of the occultic things that people put into the new world order topic. And when I got to study it again and go back and review, I'm sure there's an aspect of the new world order that's caught up in demonism and spiritualism and all of that. Certainly, it's of the devil, so he's capable of doing anything. But the simple reality of the new world order is it is man's attempt to organize life without God. It started with the Tower of Babel in the book of Genesis, and it continues today in many ways. I currently believe that the United Nations is a wonderful picture of people trying to come to a way of peace without the peacemaker, and it will continue into the ultimate new world order that will be under the leadership of the Antichrist. And all of this is in the scripture. It's all spelled out clearly. We're going to finish our discussion of the new world order today, and I'm glad that you've joined us. I hope you'll stay with us for the entire teaching time. Let me remind you again that when you send a gift to Turning Point during the month of October, we will send you a copy of this entire book, 291 pages. This is the longest book I've ever written, more research in here than I ever dreamed I would ever do in a lifetime. And it's all packed into this one book just released from Hachette, Faith Words, and in bookstores everywhere. You can get it in your local bookstore, but you can help Turning Point by ordering it from us. And when you send your gift of any size, you will be helping us do the work that God has called us to do. Well, I'm ready for the final chapter in the New World Order. Let's find out where this all goes as we study together. But for all of its good intentions, the United Nations, since its inception, has been an example of bureaucracy run amok. It is overrun with fraud and pointless debates and international mismanagement and ludicrous behavior. For instance, in 2005, under the Secretary General Kofi Annan, the United Nations had been charged with investigating human rights abuses in member nations. In 2006, the Human Rights Commission was put together, including these members: Sudan, Zimbabwe, China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. Every single one of these countries have themselves been accused of major human rights violations. It sounds like sending the fox to guard the hen house. In Rwanda, the United Nations peacekeepers did nothing to prevent 800,000 Tutsi deaths. In Bosnia, UN peacekeepers failed to protect approximately 8,000 Serbs. In Darfur, some of the worst human rights abuses of recent times continue, despite UN peacekeeper presence. But perhaps the greatest failure of the United Nations is her unfaithfulness to member nations. In 2005, former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan went on record with this pledge of support for Israel. He said, "A United Nations that fails to be at the forefront of the fight against anti-Semitism undermines its future. That obligation binds us to the Jewish people and to the state of Israel." But it was only words, because Israel continues to be the number two enemy of the United Nations. And here's a sad illustration of that. Since 1977, every November 29th, the United Nations has held an International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. But shamefully, the United Nations waited until January 2005 to commemorate the Holocaust of the Jewish people, the worst tragedy in the history of the world, and they reluctantly recognize it. Let's face it, folks. When Hugo Chavez, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and Muammar Gaddafi are invited to hold court in the General Assembly, as they did recently, One could hardly consider the UN to be serious about world peace. I cannot tell you how much restraint I have used in this last 5 minutes. You should see the original script. I am not a fan of the United Nations, and it will never, ever accomplish world peace any more than the Tower of Babel could accomplish the New World Order. Now, I have some good news for you. I've talked to you about the ancient appearance of the New World Order, the modern attempt at a New World Order. I want to tell you about the future arrival of a New World Order. Did you know there is a New World Order coming, and it's a good one? In fact, the future New World Order is commonly referred to as the Millennium. Now, what is the Millennium? You all have heard it. Some of you think the Millennium is the period of time during which I'm preaching. No, that's not right. The Millennium is made up of two words, mille and annum, which means 1,000 years. So the Millennium is a period of 1,000 years. And it will take place, now watch this, we're in the period of grace right now. The next event on the scene is the rapture of the church when Christ comes to get all of his saints. Then there's 7 years of tribulation on earth. And at the end of that 7 year tribulation, Christ will come back with his saints and set up his kingdom on this earth. And he will rule and reign on this earth for 1,000 years. Six times in Revelation 20, 1 through 7, you will see the words 1,000. After humans have exhausted every way to create peace and to govern themselves apart from God, after they have tried everything from the Tower of Babel to the United Nations, Jesus Christ will come to this earth and set up his government over all nations and peoples, and at last the world will live in peace. I'm going to devote a whole message to that later on, what that's going to be like. But let me just whet your appetite. Many passages in the Old Testament describe this as a period of peace which will extend even to the animal kingdom. Those of you who worry about whether your pets go to heaven, I don't know, but God has a plan for them in the millennium, so hang on. According to the prophet Isaiah, lambs will be able to live in peace with wolves. Goats will live in peace with leopards. Calves will lie down with lions, and cows and bears will be friends. And little children will be able to play near poisonous snakes and not be in danger. You want to read about it? It's in Isaiah 11. This 1,000-year reign of Jesus Christ, this final arriving new world order, will bring an end to all war. Isaiah 2:4 says they will beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. At last, there will be a time of peace when war will be no longer a term in our discussion. And Jesus Christ will rule and reign over the whole world. The Bible says the millennium will be a time of justice and prosperity. Psalm 72 speaks of the people of righteousness and the poor with justice, and justice being brought to the poor of the people and children of the needy. Psalm 72 tells us that in his days the righteous will flourish and prosperity will abound until the moon is no more. You talk about the good days. God has a plan for us. But he is the only one who can bring it to pass. He is the only one who can create this peace. And one of the things that is happening now is we're just going through the motions of demonstrating for the whole world how impossible it is to have peace without God. During this period of time, we're told that King David will be resurrected from the dead, and he will be a co-regent with Jesus Christ. He will reign alongside of Jesus Christ during the millennium. And not until that time where there'll be a new world order. And any attempt to create world peace before then is doomed to failure. Now, that is an issue that creates some tension for a lot of Christians. And so let me see if I can unravel it. Does the Bible not say that you and I are to be people of peace? In fact, Romans 12:18 puts it this way. Romans 12:18 says, "If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men." That is certainly a good instruction given to each of us individually, but it's not a national instruction. Do we want to have peace? Yes. But in a world that is fraught with sinfulness and evil and the desire to control, peace is only possible in a world like ours through strength. We are safe today because we are strong today. As we allow our strength to be taken from us through decisions that are made in order to make us more acceptable to the politic of the world, we will become not more safe, we will become less safe. I have written down in my notes somewhere a little statement somebody gave me years ago that goes like this: prize fighters and linebackers don't get mugged. And you know, it's an important thing for us to remember that the reason we're safe today in this hostile world is not because everybody loves us, but because everybody fears us. And we are safe because we are strong. I hope we never lose sight of that. And we're going to find out in the near future whether or not that will prevail. Should we be men and women of peace? Yes. Should we try to work out peace? But you see, one of the things about peace is peace demands concession. And there is a peace that we can create that gives away everything that's worthwhile to us. And we must be careful that we do not do that. So why is it that we should not pursue a one world order and make it our objective as a nation? Here's the first reason. The new world order promises a peace it can't produce. Did you know that? Worldwide peace, nothing's more longed for than peace. We all want peace. Human wisdom cries out for peace and the only hope for the survival of our world. We all want peace, but there is no peace apart from God. After all the years and all the attempts at peace, we find ourselves at war. We've been at war almost continually. Every peace treaty that's ever been signed, with the exception of a very few that are mostly not even essential anymore, every peace treaty has been broken. Every peace treaty that we sign with other nations, even including NATO, is violated every time you turn around. As the world conditions continue to worsen, we are heading toward the promise of a peace by a world dictator who will come and say, "I will provide peace for you." We know him as the Antichrist. And the Bible says he will use peace to manipulate the world. He will promise peace, and by that time, everybody will be so hungry for peace, they'll be willing to give away anything. And he will take control of the world. And that false peace will be in its early stages when Jesus Christ comes back for the church. It will fully unfold at the beginning of the tribulation period. And the Apostle Paul describes that like this: when they say peace and safety, sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. The Antichrist will use this false promise of peace to lull the nations asleep while he sets up his reign of terror and destruction. And Daniel says, "By peace he shall destroy many." By peace he shall destroy. This false peace of the Antichrist represents the very best that man can do without Jesus Christ. Isaiah 57:21 says, "There is no peace, says my God, for the wicked." The problem with setting up a new world order is it promises something it can't deliver. You know why? Because every nation that's in the new world order is filled with leaders who have corrupt hearts. The Bible says all men are sinful before God. And every man who gets into a place of leadership wants to control. The Bible doesn't say this, but a long time ago, Lord Acton said it. He said, "Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely." So the quest for power destroys the possibility of world peace. Secondly, it presumes a unity that is impossible. Everybody wants us all to just get along. Can't we just be one? Back in 1971, John Lennon, megastar John Lennon, wrote a song called Imagine. We probably all sang it, not even knowing what in the world we were doing. And the song asked the listeners to imagine a time when there was no heaven, no hell, no countries, nothing to kill or die for, no religion, no possessions, no need for greed or hunger, living for today, living life in peace, and the world will live as one. Doesn't that sound nice? This popular song captured the attention of an entire generation, and it expressed the utopian dream of a world unified and at peace. Unfortunately, the one thing that was missing that could make it work, and the one thing that kept it from working, is actually the centerpiece of the Constitution of the United States, the sinful nature of man. Jeremiah says it this way, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" There can never be peace when evil people are the architects. You've heard me say this before. One of my favorite C.S. Lewis quotings is this, "No clever arrangement of rotten eggs will make a good omelet." And that's true. It promises a peace it can't produce. It presumes a unity that is impossible. And then what we're learning is it paves the way for a one-world leader. And we have seen this happen over the years. We've seen it in history. I wish I had time to tell you the story of Germany and what happened in Germany with Hitler. Everywhere you look in history, you find a similar scenario where people get desperate and they look to a leader, and the leader takes advantage of their desperation and their crisis and leads them to an even worse situation than they could ever have imagined. Today, men and women in this world are looking for a leader. They're looking for someone who can make the pain go away, who can put the money back in their portfolios, who can give them a sense that maybe their children will be all right in the next generation. And as many of you know, they care not about the nature or the heart of the leader as long as he can deliver on his promise. And the Bible tells us in Daniel 7 and Revelation 13 that such a leader is coming. He will come upon this world with great charisma. He will be physically attractive, an outstanding orator, a man of great cruelty, and a spiritual bent as a cultic leader, and he will take control of the world, and they will be eating out of his hands. And we know this world leader as the Antichrist. Finally, we cannot pursue a world order today because it promises a peace it can't produce, presumes a unity that's impossible, it paves the way for a one-world ruler, and then fourthly, it produces the roadmap for a global economy. In the midst of our current global financial crisis, Nicolas Sarkozy, president of France, said, "We have attempted for years to achieve something. The crisis must be used as a chance that history does not repeat itself. We need," said Sarkozy, "we need an answer to this crisis." And according to him, that answer is in a man who can help us renew the global framework of our economy. Now, the New World Order is all about the consolidation of power. That's what it's all about. It's about bringing everybody together so that one person can control everything. That only works if the one person is Jesus Christ. You can trust him. He never fails. He never outpromises. He never does not do what he says he will do. He has never before in history sinned. He is the perfect ruler for a new world order. After Jesus, it's a long way down to anybody who would be a world order. And while we are watching what happens in our culture today, we need to be very vigilant as the people of God, not to just grab hold of the sound good stuff, the feel good stuff, but to step back for a moment and say, is this contributing to our nation or is this contributing to the world? Are we concerned about the world? Yes, but God has called us here. We are in our boundaries, according to Acts 17. We're living in our zone, and this nation has been great because the people of this nation have taken seriously the importance of building a strong nation with integrity. that could manage itself in the world. We're not by any means the largest nation, but we are the most powerful nation in the world. And there's a reason for that. We have not been globalists. We have not been internationalists. We have been nationalists. And somehow what's happened to us in these last years is we're losing the sense of our national pride. And people are angry about it. And tea parties are happening everywhere because they begin to sense that we're pulling out of the fabric of our nation the very thing that made it what it is today. When somebody's got to stand up and say, that's enough. We are a nation under God. Do not take that away from us. In God we trust is on our money. Do not take that away from us. And so in these days, as we look out at what's happening, nobody wants to be a critic. I have no desire to trade in my pulpit for a soapbox. But I want to tell you, I'm concerned as a biblical student that we are falling into the trap of the New World Order that will lead us down a pathway toward destruction. Let's ask God to give us wisdom. And let me just conclude with this. Without Jesus Christ, there is no peace. Do we all understand that? Let me tell you what I mean. Without Jesus Christ, there's no peace in the world. Without Jesus Christ, there's no peace in the nation. Without Jesus Christ, there's no peace in the churches. Without Jesus Christ, there's no peace in the family. And without Jesus Christ, there's no peace in your heart. If you don't know Jesus Christ, you can't have peace. Not lasting peace. Oh, you may have moments of the loss of anxiety, but you will never have lasting peace. Jesus Christ is called the Prince of Peace. Say that with me. The Prince of Peace. He is the Prince of Peace for the world. He's the Prince of Peace for the nations. He's the Prince of Peace for the churches. He's the Prince of Peace for your family. And he's the Prince of Peace for your heart. And if you don't know him, it begins at the end of my list. You start finding peace in your heart. And then you discover it starts to bring peace to your family. And then your family becomes a part of a church, and you bring that peace to the church. And the church brings the peace to the nations, and the nations bring the peace to the world. But all of it is centered in Jesus Christ. We honor and glorify him today. He is the one who is the peacekeeper of the world.
Well, anything short of that looks pretty bleak, doesn't it? And all the attempts that men have made throughout the years to do what only God can do seems so frail and foolish. I remember one time reading a study of all the treaties that have ever been made since the beginning of treaties and how many of them have been broken. You know how many? All of them, every one of them, because man is not capable of keeping peace. But one day the peacemaker is coming, and we look to that day when he will set up the final New World Order. We'll have more about that later on in this series. And don't forget, when you send your gift to Turning Point during the month of October, we'd like to send you a copy of this brand new book. It's just been out a few days. We have a supply in our warehouse just for the people who listen to Turning Point. So when you send your gift to us today, we will send this book right to your home. And please make your gift as generous as you can. It will help us incredibly as we reach out across the country during the fall season. We so appreciate your generosity. We want you to have this book. No matter what your gift size might be, we want you to know this is an important book for you to read and to share with someone else that you really care about. Don't forget also that we're ready to enter the weekend. And after the weekend, next Thursday, we're going to start our rally season in Greensboro, North Carolina. I hope that you will come and be with us. If you haven't already ordered your tickets, you can still do that by going to davidjeremiah.org/rallies. When we get your request, if there is not enough time for us to mail them to your home, we will hold them for you at will call, and you'll be able to pick them up at the Coliseum. But the time is running short, so don't wait much longer. And please come and join us. You will be blessed and encouraged, and go home fired up to serve Jesus like never before. That's what the purpose of these events is really all about, and we promise you it will be a night of encouragement. Now, thank you for joining us for the week. Have a wonderful weekend. Watch Turning Point on television this weekend. We'll see you right here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
The message you heard today originated in the pulpit of Shadow Mountain Community Church, where David serves as senior pastor. Did you know that Turning Point is on radio and television this weekend? To find programming in your area, visit our website at davidjeremiah.org/radio or call us at 800-947-1993. When you call or visit online, request this month's resource, The Coming Economic Armageddon. This new book by best-selling author Dr. David Jeremiah will help you learn how to protect yourself spiritually and financially. It's yours today for a gift of any amount when you call 800-947-1993 or visit davidjeremiah.org/radio. We'd also love to hear what God is doing in your life through this broadcast. Write to Turning Point, Post Office Box 3838, San Diego, California 92163. This is Mark Larson. Join us Monday as we continue the series, The Coming Economic Armageddon, on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.